Fab Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
That's right. This is the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports 360 AZ. You may have guessed I'm not Brad Sesmat. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. Thrilled with my co-host, Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona. You see her everywhere. She's on with the Coyotes. You see her with the D-backs. You can't turn the TV on without seeing Jody. Even some Cardinals. Do you know what to do with this radio stuff, Jody? Is this confusing to you?
No, I did start in radio. Together, we might be as tall as Brad.
That's true.
We are filling in.
Where did you do radio?
I grew up in South Florida, right, as you know, and when I graduated from University of Miami, I didn't get a job in TV right away, and I got a job in sports radio at WQAM, which is still, I think, the home of the Panthers and Marlins and Dolphins, started as a board op back when they had, like, buttons that you pushed rather than...
Right.
This actually looks sort of familiar, but I don't know. Everything's digital now. But,
right.
And then I did some updates, and sure, then I did a weekly show on the Dolphins. So
awesome. And, you know, yeah, and I hate to bring this stuff up because I'm so tired of the whole, ooh, women in sports thing. It's not a novelty.
A lot.
We get it a lot, and people are always wondering, did they pay their dues? Well, there you go. I mean, you were doing the board op thing, you're pushing the buttons and all that.
And then
stuff.
I went to work in Buffalo to do, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, they want to do TV in their hometown or jump right into a top 10 market. And Buffalo, I thought it was great to go to Buffalo, top 40 market,
right,
NFL team, NHL team. So I guess you could say I sort of cut my teeth in Buffalo.
Absolutely.
And
we got a bunch of big stories to talk about today. I did want to ask you, because I see you on TV so much, Diamondbacks, Coyotes, you were talking about Cardinals. What is the sort of the peak of your season where you're pretty much losing your mind when there are two sports are going on?
August can be tough because I'm kind of juggling preseason Cardinals,
right,
and Diamondbacks. And sometimes the Diamondbacks have these huge road trips, like 10-game trips in August. So I may not do every preseason game like I used to. But probably that, you know, right now is not too crazy. If the Coyotes were in the playoffs, obviously it'd be a little crazy.
Right, right.
Yeah. Which, by the way, you're on TV, too.
TV.
You're pretty much everywhere as well, but
yeah,
maybe not doing games every night.
Behind the scenes a little bit more, I think. All right. Well, yeah, we both cover a lot of sports. There's a lot of things to talk about today. And today's top stories are brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Casino located in the beautiful White Mountains, just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head up now, enjoy the beautiful spring weather, and stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. To set sort of a, not a sad note, Jody, but this is the 11th year anniversary of Pat Tillman's death. The story that captured, I think, not only our nation, but internationally, too. A guy gives up NFL career, NFL money, loses his life in Afghanistan. Do you remember sort of how you found out? What was your involvement in the coverage of Pat?
You know, it's interesting. I don't remember the moment I found out. I don't remember where I was. I remember thinking, though, can this really be happening?
Right.
You know, because people do lose their lives over there and in war, and they still do. And it just hits home when, and you think, you know, this guy that made so much news with this, choosing all that money, or I should say choosing to go into the military over all the money that he could have had and sort of the NFL life. And you're thinking, this is just, it just hits you right in the face.
Right.
And I don't remember exactly the moment, but then I remember kind of processing it. And then a couple days later, they had this ceremony in a memorial in San Jose at the Rose Garden.
Sure.
And just a beautiful place. And everyone gathered there. Jake Plummer, Bruce Snyder. There were some coaches that a few coaches that really hit high school and sort of formulated his early football career. And Dave McGinnis was there. A lot of players. Kwame Lassiter comes to mind, but a lot of Cardinal players. And it was just really emotional, really hard. And I know you have memories of Pat, too. Just he was such a unique guy.
Unique. I always remember Bruce Snyder, I think, it was saying when they met, when he recruited Pat, Pat said, if you're thinking of redshirting me, don't redshirt me because I have plans. I'm getting out in X amount of years. And so if that's the way this is going to happen, I'm going elsewhere. And they agreed. And he, you know, obviously started as a freshman, started playing at ASU as a freshman. But the thing that struck me was the night before it really became official, I was on one of those ASU message boards and somebody broke the story on there and everyone was like, you know, this is irresponsible. It's not true. Because mm-hmm. it was so out of left field, no one believed it. Understandably. And I thought, you know, people are dogging whoever posted it. It was somebody who had a military connection and the information had leaked. And so when it came, you know, the truth came out in the morning that it had happened, it is like you said, it was surreal because he was one of those guys that seems so infallible, you know, on the football field. He was not, you know, not the biggest guy at his position, wasn't supposed to be as good as he was. So he seemed like he could survive anything, Jody. But but obviously, you know, something else came to be. It was really sad.
Yeah, it was just hard. So we remember, obviously, it's been, you and I were talking before we started the show, 11 years, it seems like a long time now. Right. And but, you know, just a couple of memories I have from covering him. You know, we have done over the years some featurey things, and he did not want to do this, but I did a story on him doing a triathlon.
He didn't want to do it. That's classic.
He wouldn't let us shoot any video of him like swimming or so we drove out. I drove out with, this is odd because I, you know, I don't know why really I didn't drive my own car, but I went with him in his Jeep with no air conditioning, which was so typical, Pat. And it was in like June, so it was hot. And we went, he would let us do the interview at Tempe Town Lake, and just him sitting on the banks there, you know, really wasn't visually the story we wanted.
Right, sure.
He was just so humble and didn't want people to, he didn't want to glorify, like, I'm doing all this, I'm, you know, and, but he loved physical challenges. I mean, you don't go into the military and become an Army Ranger without being able to do what he was able to do. And then the other one was just, I have this memory when I go to Flagstaff still with my family, my husband and my two kids, I go to that coffee bean shop right by campus. And he used to sit there in the middle of the day after the first practice and read. And most guys would go back and sleep or play video games or lay down. And he was always there reading.
That's
and that just kind of shows what a unique guy. I can still see him sitting there at that coffee table.
Yeah, I could totally envision that. And just a quick last thing I want to say is I'm happy to see where Marie Tillman's life has gone because, you know, this was his high school sweetheart. Kind of behind the scenes a little bit when a lot of the storyline unfolded. I don't think she was comfortable suddenly being thrust in this spotlight. And now she's very successful. She remarried. She has a child and just seems very happy when I've talked to her and very involved with the Tillman Foundation.
Yeah, it's great all the work that she's done. But you're right. I don't think she was comfortable early on. But now she's really at the forefront with their scholarship program and all the things that they do.
Well, speaking of football, more immediate issues. Last night, there was the big unveil of the NFL schedules on NFL Network, which have they been doing that? I don't even remember that happening before. But they actually, so they had a show, unveiled the schedules. I think they got very good ratings, actually, from what I heard. Just sort of your gut reaction, Jody. Obviously, you're around this team a lot. What did you think of what you saw with the schedule?
I think it's sets up well.
Right.
You know, there's always going to be bumps in the road. I think, you know, you look at to end the season with, what is it, at Eagles, Packers, Seahawks at home. Those are tough teams.
Right.
We don't know how the Eagles are going to end up, but it'll be a cold weather game. So that's tough. But I like, you know, for them to get a lot of games, 3 of 4 at home to start. And then you have in the middle a rough road patch, but there's always going to be something. The bye week in the middle. Everyone always talks about how, you know, back in the day, the Cardinals would be disrespected and the bye week would
always
be like week 2. That's not happening this year. They get 3 primetime games. I think it's great.
Well, and you know, ending with Seattle here for fans, I mean, who knows how this NFC West will unfold. But it could be the potential to be such a huge game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's building that way. And I agree. I think when you get 3 teams at home to start, New Orleans, San Francisco, St. Louis, and then you got a road trip in the Bears' second game of the season. Talk about just sort of a way that you can really build some momentum. And Bruce Arians had some early thoughts on how this all broke down.
It's East Coast games and night games. You know, how the travel is going to affect our preparation. And so far, it looks pretty good. We've got a Monday night game at home and a 11 o'clock in the morning kickoff in Cleveland. That's going to be the toughest one as far as schedule.
And thanks, NFL Network, for that. It is interesting because, and we'll have Peter King on in just a little bit, but and I think you read this too, Jody, that the Cardinals, I think it sounded like, got some help from the NFL. Is that right with these Eastern road trips?
Yeah, it looks like, according to Peter King, who does a great job, I love reading his stuff, Monday Morning Quarterback, but he said that the Cardinals asked for maybe a chance for the four East Coast road trips to maybe have two back-to-back and they can stay. And, you know, Paula, they did that a few years ago with the Jets and I think Redskins then when they played them. They did it 2 years ago with New Orleans and Tampa. So it's just to make it easier. I actually don't know. It might be something we can ask Peter is, can teams... You know, I don't know what level teams can ask for certain things.
Sure, I'm curious about that
but
too.
It's interesting.
It is, and we were talking about momentum. And Arians too sounded like he was pretty excited about starting with three or four at home. And here's something from the NFL Network as well.
You got to play them all sometime. We've been pretty successful the last 2 years at home. So I like coming off three home games and a trip to Chicago in September instead of December.
You know, when Peter King comes on, I really want to ask him a little bit too about just what direction he thinks the Cardinals are going to go in the draft. That's coming up. There's some holes to fill. We were talking before the show, Jody, about, you know, do they have enough at running back? I mean, I think it's a legitimate question when you're with the season coming up.
Yeah, we started talking about Adrian Peterson right. And that talk continuing. But I think everyone feels like he's going to remain with the Vikings because they just want too much for him. He makes a lot of money. But even if the Cardinals were willing to do that, are they willing to trade him? And I think maybe the answer is no. So, yeah, interesting, because I know they also want a cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's just – and we've come to know Steve Keim and the job that he does, and so it kind of depends on who he's really feeling good about as far as there's – you know, they all come together and they've done a lot of prep on who they like. And if they like Melvin Gordon, if he's there – you know, we're going to have that press conference later
right.
today, which Paula and I joked, if there's anything where you don't learn really anything, I mean,
that.
You're literally like watching their eyes. Are they moving? Okay, is there a little, you know, tell we can figure
right,
out when
right.
they're talking about someone? But they're not going to give out any information.
No, the Cardinals, I think at noon or whatever, have a media availability with Keim and with Arians, and they're going to talk about the draft. But again, are they, you know, are they slipping us information so we'll put it out there and, you know, confuse other teams? It's always very entertaining. All right, that is Jody Jackson of Fox Sports Arizona. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central. We are filling in for Brad Sesmat. And coming up, one of our friends knows a heck of a lot about baseball, Pedro Gomez, ESPN.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ. It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmat.
Well, not quite. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, here with Jody Jackson, very talented host, reporter from Fox Sports Arizona. And speaking of talent, one of our good friends is doing his weekly segment. His name is Pedro Gomez of ESPN. I was just looking at your bio, Pedro, and it said something like you've covered 15 World Series, 10 All-Star games. Makes you sound a little old, actually.
That actually has not been updated. It's only over 20 now.
Wow.
And at least 15, 16 All-Star games. Yeah, I have to update that.
Yeah,
I don't even know where you found that. I don't even know where to update that.
I hear you, and I'm just teasing you. And Pedro, we're going to get into some hardcore baseball stuff in a second, but Jody and I were just talking about Pat Tillman. It's the 11th anniversary of his death. I can't believe, frankly, it's been that long. Did you have any kind of relationship? Did you cover him at all, or...?
You know, here's the surprising part. When I got to the Bay Area, I mean, when I got to the Arizona Republic, I had covered the Oakland A's in the Bay Area for the Mercury News. And I walk into the Cardinal locker room once to do a sidebar, you know, how we all kind of filter out during our off seasons and help out the other sports. And he comes up to me and goes, "Hey, I used to read you when I was a kid covering the A's. That's my favorite team."
Wow.
And I was just blown away. I'm like, because... We all know how many people really read a byline.
Sure,
very few. You know, not a columnist. I wasn't a columnist. I was a beat writer. So, but he knew, and he was a big A's fan, and so we developed a relationship because of that. And then later on, when I did become a columnist at the Republic, I remember there were times that I would go cover a Cardinals game, and Tillman was always kind of a go-to guy because he always was so well-spoken and kind of had his finger on the pulse of the team. So I always made it a point to try to find him. And, you know, Cardinals would lose a game, which back then they lost a lot. He was always at his locker. And then on the occasions when the team would win a game, he was never, ever to be found. And I remember I would ask Paul Jensen, the PR guy for the Cardinals, hey, I'd like to talk to Pat real quick. And he'd come back and say, Pat's not going to talk. When the team wins, he doesn't feel like talking because he wants everyone else to have that glory. He'll stand up when they lose, but never when they win. And I just thought, wow, that's an amazing trait to have, that you're willing to take the heat for a loss, but you want nothing to do with a win. You want everyone else to relish that. And I've never forgotten that moment about him.
Yeah, Pedro, you mentioned when he was such a good interview to get, and he was just so brutally honest at times too.
Exactly.
Is, you know, not always the case.
It's pretty. Yeah.
Yeah, there was no sugarcoating things with him. I mean, he would come out and tell you exactly what was going on. And I think that's one of the reasons Dave McGinnis and he, because, you know, McGinnis, who was the coach for much of Tillman's time with the Cardinals, he was a no-nonsense guy. He would always, and that probably is what ended up costing him to a degree with ownership. But, you know, McGinnis never hid. He never lied about things. If things were not going well, he spoke. And I have a feeling that that's one of the things that he enjoyed most about Pat Tillman.
Well, I remember, not to stray too far off this topic, but I remember McGinnis ended up turning down that Bears job because they weren't being honest about that either, about releasing information, things like that. So, yeah, those two were quite a pair. All right, you mentioned sugarcoating, Pedro, and I know you don't do that either. I'm wondering, should fans be to temper their excitement about what they've seen about the Diamondbacks so far? Have they surprised you at all, or it's just early in the season kind of stuff? What do you think?
Well, no, it is early in the season, but that doesn't mean you can't be surprised. And yes, to a degree, I think I have been somewhat surprised because I didn't think that the Diamondbacks would have this kind of success early on. I thought they were going to struggle from the start. And, you know, kudos to them and to the new front office and the new manager. And, you know, one of the things I've known about Chip Hale is he's a no-nonsense guy as well. He is not going to put up with excuses and things like that. You either do or you don't. And I think some of that has already been instilled into this ball club, and it's been great to see because it's been a while since we've seen a hungry ball club in the Valley. And right now, you're watching a club that, yeah, there's flaws, there's no doubt about it, and there's young pitching, and hey, Archie Bradley is off to a great start, but he is still a young pitcher, and every young pitcher does get knocked around, so that will happen at some point. Even to someone like Archie Bradley, but boy, they're fighting. And that's one thing that I think, you know, for those of us that live in the Valley, haven't seen a lot of fight out of the Diamondbacks in recent years. So that's been absolutely great to see.
Yeah, Pedro, I think the fight has been there. You know, just the first road trip was 4-3. And you know, beating the Giants and being able to beat the revamped Padres, you know, it's been good to see the team kind of with a fresh start, and Chip's I think, like you said, a great guy to lead that. One thing that's been interesting, everyone looked at the rotation and thought, how are you going to be much different than last year where their ERA was 7 after a whole month in April? I mean, every guy that went out there was just giving up 5-6 runs a game. But the last 6 games, their ERA of the starters, that is, 1.93. So obviously, I don't know if they can sustain that. If they do, they'll be in really good shape. They won't sustain but it's a good sign.
If they sustain that, Jody, they will be
World Series champs. Yeah,
absolutely. But you know, you also have to look at all the variables. And the reality is, they're playing a Giants club that is struggling to score any runs, and they played them 4 straight times. So that also goes into the equation. But regardless, you're still facing major league hitters, and they're still getting the job done right now. And you know, the thing is, if you do this well this early, it can kind of snowball, and all of a sudden, teams start to say, hey, why can't we play this way the whole year? And you know, they are going to take their lumps because everybody does, even the best team go through stretches where they don't get things done. But right now, it's probably the best case scenario for the start of the season that Chip Hale or Dave Stewart or Tony La Russa could have possibly envisioned. And that's something that they were, I think the message was during spring training. And, you know, for them, they've got to be happy to see that it's translated into the first 2.5 weeks of the season.
He's Pedro Gomez, ESPN. To my right, if you're to my left, I guess, if you're watching us on video, that's Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona. I'm Paula Bovinese, Central Sports. You mentioned Chip Hale, Pedro, and what was your take on that hire? And when you've been around him, what are his best attributes, you think?
I knew Chip when he was with the Diamondbacks years ago, and I've known him during his time with Bob Melvin in Oakland. And I think Chip is a guy that was always a scrapper as a ball player, and that's something he wanted to instill in his players, no matter how good they are. And, the other thing that works in his favor is that when your best player is a hard worker like Paul Goldschmidt, it makes it a lot easier to get that message across to everyone in the clubhouse. If the best player was more diva-like, that would be a lot harder. But when your best player buys in and is kind of a silent leader who just, puts his head down and goes to work, I think it makes it a lot easier for everyone else to follow. And that is, I think Chip Hale has been fortunate in the sense that those are the kind of players he has on this roster, guys that are willing to put their head down and just go to work. And that's the type of player he was. He was a guy that always, when he was playing, he was the 23rd, 24th guy on the roster. He had to fight and scratch and claw just to make the big league roster every year. And those are the kind of managers that tend to be the best kind of managers if you can get the ball club to buy into that. And like I said, I think that he's done a very good job of having the players buy into that. And I think that's probably Chip's best attribute.
Yeah, it's just the whole street cred thing for me is so big in baseball more than any other sport with, how players look at their managers and coaches. It just seems, Pedro, that stuff really matters.
I think it matters more in baseball than any other sport. In the NFL, you got a lot of guys who are head coaches, but they never played the game. But their philosophy and things like that is what the players pick up on. But in baseball, because of how difficult it is to make it to the major leagues, because you have to go through all the levels in the minor leagues to reach that success, to reach, one of those 25 jobs on a club and however many clubs there were at the time that you made it, that goes a long way inside the clubhouse for a player saying, hey, this guy played. I remember years ago, I was covering a Yankee postseason series and some guys had looked up Joe Torre's numbers. And at the end, somebody looked, the other one goes, and this guy could really play. I mean, look at the numbers he put up. And that, it's easy for players to see how good your manager was. And if he was a scrappy guy who had to fight and claw, that comes through. And you know what kind of player he was, because if he's only getting 80 at-bats a year, but he's on the team year after year, that tells you something about that player. And that all translates into the clubhouse in terms of, do we listen to this guy or not?
It's interesting. You're following the Yankees and the Tigers. They're playing tonight. And
there's snow flurries here right now,
by the way. Are you kidding me, Pedro?
No, I'm not.
I'm sorry to hear that. You and I remember you and I shared a dugout well a few years ago at Citi Field. It was pouring. And that's kind of always how it goes, right? Occasionally in those cities. I hope you don't have
Absolutely.
To bundle up too much. But, the A-Rod, it's interesting. But you have to be surprised at the way he's playing, right? The way he's hitting the ball right now?
I think a lot of people are, because when you take a year and a half basically off from the game and you are almost 40 years old and you're able to get off to this kind of start, that speaks volumes. The question is, how long can he maintain this? The other question is, at age 40, your body doesn't respond the way it did earlier in your life. So is the DL on the horizon at any point? Because, any little nick or something, and boom, you're on the disabled list, especially at, he's going to be 40 this summer. So they're maintaining him to a light workload because they're DHing him a lot. They're putting him at first base a little bit. He's not playing third base hardly at all. So there's not a lot of stress on his body, and that's probably the only way you keep Alex Rodriguez, a guy like that, around for a full season. So to this point, Girardi is managing him very, very well.
You know, and last thing here, Pedro, it's fascinating to watch his story still unfold. I was on Twitter the other day and some fan was calling him a godsend. And it's like, you know, a couple months ago, he was a pariah and he was, you know, a liar and all those other things. How much do you think this season can impact his legacy in the sense, and maybe not legacy, but how fans perceive him? I know we're such a sort of forgiving country. Sports fans will forgive anybody if they sort of come out and apologize or say things the right way. Can this sort of impact how people feel about him down the road?
I think to a degree, but I think the fact that he admitted use years ago and then he accepted a suspension this past year, last year, those are things that are going to weigh on him for the rest of his life. And the reality is that, you know, he's the one responsible. He's the one that put himself in that situation. Nobody else did that to him. So, to a degree, yes, he can try to help himself quite a bit by having a productive season. And that's really, you know, that goes a long way, especially in a place like the Bronx,
right,
with their fans. But in terms of long term, this will still always be a cloud over him the rest of his life.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, that is Pedro Gomez, ESPN. Jody Jackson, Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmat. Pedro, thanks for joining us. It's always a treat to have you on the show.
Oh, always great to talk to both of you.
Good to talk to you, Pedro.
All right, coming up, we're going to shift from baseball to a little bit of basketball. More trouble for the Morris twins. Yes, the Morris twins. We'll talk about that and what the Suns do now coming up on Sports 360 AZ. Welcome to Sports 360 AZ. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, here co-hosting with Jody Jackson of Fox Sports Arizona. We are filling in for Brad Sesmat, who's probably slacking again. I don't even know what Brad's doing, but we're happy to be here filling in. We just had Pedro Gomez, and we'll have Peter King coming up soon, 11:05, and Peter always has some great stuff to say, so we're going to be talking to him shortly as well. I teased this before the break, Jody. More trouble for the Morris twins. You know, what do the Suns do now? But charged with felony assault. I mean, that's a big deal. And we talked a little bit about that. It's not just one thing with them. That's been the problem, and I think the perception with the public. It's not just one thing. It's been a long line of things.
Yeah, and I mean, I covered a handful of Suns games this year, so I'm not honestly in tune with the day-to-day actions of the Morris twins. But obviously I heard the huge controversy when Markeith came out and kind of said the fans weren't behind them. And then this is obviously serious. This is not just talking about the fans. This is a, you know, felony assault charge. You hear the background of what happened, but at the end of the day, for me, it's making, you know, decisions, making a judgment call in the heat of a moment. I know there's obviously still litigation, everything to come, but it certainly doesn't look good as far as their maturation. People already talked about that with the fan comments.
Sure.
You know, these guys, you know, they're not showing that maturity that you would hope you would have. And I think the question is, and you and I aren't going to be able to solve this during this radio show, but this web show, it's just the fact that, you know, the Suns have to weigh their value to the team, their character, all these things. And, you know, as Lon Babby and Ryan McDonough go forward, it will be interesting because they did re-sign them in September they've invested $52 million amongst both of them. I know they said,
sure,
Here's this $52 million, you divvy it up. And so they made that commitment to them, and they even brought on Marcus for Markeith. I think that was, you know, understood. And so what have they done in return? It hasn't been as good as the Suns have liked. And now, obviously, you know, it's a situation where it's a legal issue, too.
And just sort of to refresh the storyline a little bit for people who are kind of following it. And this is from Paul Coro's story. So the Maricopa County grand jury hands down this indictment for both. And the storyline, according to a police report, report. It happened June 24th at a weekend basketball tournament. Police indicated that Morris twins and three other men assaulted Eric Hood, 36, a man they denied knowing, but Hood has told police they've been friends since ninth grade in Philadelphia, that they had a falling out in 2010, and in 2010, one of the people involved in this saw Hood's text message to the Morris's mother saying he would always be there for her, and they took it out of context, telling the twins that Hood wanted Angel Morris to be his girlfriend. And so this is clearly something that's gone on. And we're looking at it about 5 years. There's a history. There was an assault. Again, this still has to play out. The Suns are not really making a comment on it. But it does speak volumes at the very least, Jody. They put themselves in a bad position. We don't know how it's going to unfold. And this has been a storyline with the Suns. And leadership is so huge in sports. And this is symptomatic to me of a problem with the Suns. You don't have that clubhouse guy necessarily rallying the team, maybe a veteran in their ears about how they're handling things. That was always one of the things, and I've mentioned this before, that Steve Nash was so good at. Mike D'Antoni told me once that he was a guy, whenever something was brewing in the locker room, he would address the matter before it became a story. And that has just not been evident with the Suns this season.
No, they haven't had that. And they've got, you know, really has been a lot of turmoil from Goran Dragic. And if you look at just the end of the season last year and all the hopes for, oh, wow, they overachieved. They have something special here. You know, can they do this with two point guards, even three? You can go back to the decision for Isaiah Thomas, who I think is a talented player, but was it a smart move to bring him in and have the three-headed monster? Probably not, looking back. And now two of them are gone. So, you know, it's been interesting. And, you know, you have to have trust in Ryan McDonough at this point. He's going to do the right thing. But they've had a lot of stuff going on, that whole situation where everything happened and that they were going on the bus and players were leaving and trading, you know, trades going down. And there wasn't a leader before all of that, and there isn't a leader now. And you're right. They definitely need that. They need someone that's able to Pedro, just to tie it in, it makes me think of Pedro talking about Paul Goldschmidt.
Right.
You know, when you have, you know, Jeff Hornacek can only do so much. And then, you know, you have to have someone that's carrying that torch and having that standard that's in that locker room. And they don't have that right now.
No, not at all. And it's really interesting how the perception has shifted a bit with Suns management. I think for very good reason, early on, Ryan McDonough was applauded for the decisions they made. When you look at that team last year, there's so much excitement in this community. I really feel like they've blown this opportunity a bit to build off that. I mean, they were playing so much better than people thought. McDonough was sort of hailed as, you know, young genius. Lon Babby was now in a role that he was sort of more defined for and better for. And things were so positive. I love the hiring of Hornacek. I thought that was a great decision too. Mm-hmm. But it's now people are turning on them, because the bottom line is the Morris twins just got extensions last year. I think they were for four more seasons in addition to the current one. And so while, you know, we were talking in the NBA, you can make things happen despite extensions and contracts, but it does make it a lot more difficult because it feels a little bit like the team is stuck with them. So,
yeah, I mean, it just depends on, you know, if you're looking to unload them and who wants them. They're talented guys. I mean, obviously you can see that Markieff, it has been a huge piece to the team, Marcus off the bench. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because they'll reevaluate. And I totally agree. They didn't build on last year. I know that's not, they obviously planned to build on last year, but it was unfortunately just a 1 year sort of feel good story. And now they're kind of back at square one. So
absolutely. And Markieff and Marcus, as they often do, issued a statement together. They said, "We've been advised by our attorneys not to discuss this case or make any statements about it. We are sorry for the distraction this has caused our fans and the Suns." Lon Babby only basically said, "We're disappointed to learn that they've been charged. It's a serious matter. We'll treat it as such, but they have to let the legal process unfold." And I get that, Jody. You can't just go out there and say, we're going to discipline these guys, because there has to be due process.
Correct. And this incident happened January 24th, I believe. So, you know, now it's just a matter of, it will play out in court, and then they can obviously make decisions based on that.
And so that, we're going to learn more about that story coming up. Other big news in the NBA, and I think this just happened, Yahoo Sports reporting that Scott Brooks, coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, has been fired. That's been rumored to happen for a while. So some people, I'm sure most people aren't going to be surprised it happened. But, you know, it's funny. You look at a guy, I think they finished 45 and 37. There's teams in the NBA that would like that record this year. But in the NBA, it's just not about the record.
Not with the kind of talent that they have, no question, an MVP candidate.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, it's and you, when you don't make the playoffs when you're as talented a team and with those many players, and I know they've dealt with injuries and everything else. So this is going to be too an interesting hire where they go from here, because I think Scott Brooks was pretty well respected. Mm-hmm. Players seemed to connect with him early, although you definitely sense things had soured as the season progressed. So there is another opening here in the NBA. I am Paula Bovin. That is Jody Jackson. We are talking sports for Brad Sesmat, who is off today here on Sports 360 AZ. And want to remind people you can catch the show. I know you're already listening, but a reminder on sports360az.com and also azcentralsports.com is where it's streaming live. All right, some buzz. Now let's talk about some happy stuff. Negative buzz in the NBA with the Suns and Scott Brooks being fired. Baseball is actually good here. Jody's around the Diamondbacks a lot. I want to get her take on a couple of things, including Archie Bradley pitching again tonight. The buzz is real around this kid here. Sports 360 AZ.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
A little headbanger music, not quite, but kind of adding a little energy here in the studio.
Does Eric Sorensen choose the music? Is that what we have? Or Jared over there? Is that
Jared you? Chooses it.
All right, Jared.
Okay.
Well, good job, Jared. I guess they like the rejoin.
Who was that, Jared?
He's
doing it?
Mixing it up.
Muse.
Muse? Very nice. All right. That is Jared and Eric Sorensen, whose voice you just heard. Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, here with Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona. We are filling in for Brad Sesmat, who has the day off. And you're talking about some downer stuff before. Guys getting arrested, coaches getting fired. Scott Brooks was fired today from the Oklahoma City Thunder, as expected. One of the positive stories in town, and interesting, because I've been out of town a lot the last few weeks, and people have been asking me about the Diamondbacks. And I think everybody thought the worst, Jody, they were going to be struggling. One of the great storylines with this team is Archie Bradley. He pitches tonight. A lot of times I know they say, you know, once – guy goes through the order once or twice with a couple different teams, people start figuring him out, all that stuff. He seems to be so dialed in, and you've been around him more. His personality seems to me like he can sort of handle the spotlight. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. Last year, you know, we knew Archie. He was drafted right behind Trevor Bauer the year that they had the 3rd overall pick and the 7th overall pick. Now, Trevor came out of UCLA. He won the Golden Spikes Award, you know, so he had played on, you know, competition collegiate level. Archie was coming out of high school, and Archie had chosen between football, going to Oklahoma, being a quarterback, and baseball. So he was more of a long term. You know, we saw Trevor come up, I think, in 2012. But Archie, you know, last year there was all this hype kind of about this is his time, we might see him in the rotation, and he really wasn't ready yet. And I think, for a lot of reasons, why are guys not ready? Well, he's only 22, number one. But I think last year, he didn't really handle that well because, you know, there was a lot of pressure.
Sure.
Maybe. And then when the rotation started faltering, and actually happened more in spring, he didn't really, I guess, show them exactly what they wanted to see in spring. He had a poor out. They took him to Australia. He pitched in that exhibition game. Didn't do very well. Then he had an injury mid-season, and then this year he came back and he just kind of told us all in the media, you know, I'm just going to focus on myself.
Right.
I'm just going to, and honestly, I didn't really know him very well last year, but you just noticed this year he just came in, he was having a lot of fun, kind of vocal in the clubhouse. He's just a young guy enjoying it. I think he enjoyed spring training. He's very close with Jake Lamb. Mm-hmm. The two of them, you know, Jake came up last year. And the two of them were really keeping it light in there. And then this spring was really a good spring for the club. Chip Hale, as a bench coach, he learned, he would prepare everything for Bob Melvin. He learned a lot from Bob Melvin and from a lot of guys through the years. He'd been doing this, you know, a long time. And I think he really ran a great camp. And Archie this year came in and kind of, you know, they traded Trevor Cahill right before the season began, pretty much,
like right.
a couple days before. And Archie's inserted into the rotation. He knew he was going to be part of the rotation. He was able to adjust that in his head, kind of be with the team, and came out. We all know what happened against Clayton Kershaw. He outpitched
sure.
Clayton Kershaw. He outpitched Madison Bumgarner. And Pedro mentioned, too, and it's fair, the Giants really were struggling.
Right, right.
Struggling at the plate. But now, you know, tonight, Yovani Gallardo, who used to be, of course, the Brewers' ace. The Rangers are 6-8. The D-backs are 7-7. But I think we all feel good here in the Valley about 7-7.
Absolutely.
You're holding your head above water. You're seeing some things. You're hoping your young players get better. And Archie really has shown he has that fastball that is not going to be 95, 96, but it can be 91 to 93, and it has a lot of what they call late life, which means it's moving, you know, and he's proven that and a lot of pitchers, that's just as valuable in many ways.
No question, and, you know, you mentioned the 7-7, and I think part of the reason fans feel good, it's just not the record, but it's things they're showing, you know. Take away last night, I mean, their defense, their interior defense has been fantastic. The bullpen has been showing. Again, let's not throw away last night.
Yeah, last night those things faltered but those are kind of the strengths of the team.
Right, things that can hold up maybe through the season. So it's been encouraging. One of my favorite moments, I think, with Bradley, and I don't know if you were involved in this, but that first game, they cut to his parents were in the stands, mm-hmm. and they're, you know, the baseball especially with these guys, these kids are playing Little League. You see them grow. You see them give everything in high school. You wonder if they're going to get drafted. Then they toil through the minors. Their reaction was priceless just because, you know, finally the fruition of all that yeah. hard work.
Yeah, it's true. I was hosting the shows that night,
right.
Not reporting in the game, but our reporter, Kate Longworth, did interview them. And those are just so, those are great moments. Mm-hmm. And those are the moments I love as a reporter because their raw emotion
right.
is just great. I mean, they like you said, they've waited many, many years. He, you know, I think sometimes you think when you're in the minors, did I choose the right thing? I could have been playing football.
Sure.
You know, I could have helped Oklahoma. He even said the other day, you know, Oklahoma struggled. I could have helped them. Maybe I could have been the difference. So, no, he's validated right now in all that he's done. He's worked hard. And that's the thing, too, is he's worked really hard to get here. And so he's reaping the benefit right now. He also said he's trusting, you know, I don't think it was distrust maybe last year, but he
right.
had his own thoughts about, and now he's trusting Mike Harkey, trusting Tuffy Goes, which, you know, and he's just taking that information. And that's what pitchers have to do. You
no
can't
question.
Be out there thinking when you're on the mound. You have to trust the plan. Your catcher's executing it. And then, you know, as he gets older and more experienced, you know, he'll be able to know how to weigh all of that. But he's putting it together right now. It's only his third start. But, you know, it's funny because you know how there's Harvey Day, you know?
Right.
And I think it's still, now that he's come back off Tommy John, I think they still call it
Harvey Day, yeah.
And, you know, Kershaw Day or whatever you want to. And, okay, so maybe we're not ready to do Bradley Day, but
it could be coming.
Be
it could be coming. Well, I was thinking of him because I've been, honestly, the last month I was covering a lot of basketball, NCAA tournament stuff. I'm seeing a lot of guys, even freshmen, who next year, immediately they're making a couple million mm-hmm. dollars because they go right to the NBA. These guys, that minor league business of taking those long bus trips, of, you know, earning minimum amount of money, it's not easy. And they lose a lot of guys along the way because the glamour and the glory of baseball, it just it's not there early on. So
yeah.
I'm always excited and interested to see when guys succeed, and there's definitely a buzz about them. We had Brad had Derek Hall on talking about Archie Bradley on Monday.
We had our highest rating in over a year the night that he pitched, and we happened to have Randy Johnson in the booth as a guest for a few minutes, and we peaked, you know, and
sure.
it just big numbers. But there's a lot of excitement about Archie, and that's one thing about our fan base. They follow our minors. They like our number one picks. You know, they get excited when these guys come up, and Archie's been in the conversation for, you know, for 3 years, and to see him come up now and have an impact.
Yeah, it's people are buzzing about him, and it's pretty exciting because I think the Diamondbacks needed someone to rally around. Paul Goldschmidt is obviously a guy you can rally around, but this is sort of a new story.
And we like good ratings.
And good rating, yeah. Spoken like a true TV person,
yeah,
there, Jody,
you know,
Jackson.
It has been winning, you know, winning is big. We know you want to watch television and see a winning team, and so it's fun right now.
Not so much fun for Brian Price lately. Speaking of winning, I know that the Reds have been struggling a bit. The manager makes more news than he probably ever imagined. This is a storyline that's going to be around for a long time. Well, you hear, just listen in and you can hear part of his rant.
Has it always been this way, where we just tell everybody everything? So every opponent that we have has to know exactly what we have, which relievers are available, which guys are here and which guys aren't here, when they can play, what they can do. It's nobody's business. It's certainly not the opponent's business. We've got to deal with this bullshit. I'd like to talk, and I have spoken as candidly as I can with you people. If that's not good enough, I won't say a thing. I'll go yes, sir, no, sir. And I can do that. But I've been as candid as I can be about this team and our players, and we got to deal with this. Every team that we play has to know every guy that's here and what they can and can't do. Me. It's a disgrace. I'm sick of this. It's hard enough to win here to have every opponent know exactly what the we bring to the table every day. I don't like it. That's what I'm saying. Make it very clear. I don't like the way that this is going at all.
Wow. That was a 77 F-bomb. Am I allowed to say F-bombs, Eric, on there? Okay. 77 F-bombs by Price in his rant. We only heard a segment of it. You know, and I'm sure you've heard the story, but if you haven't, he was upset about reports that their all-star catcher, Devin Mesoraco,
who had a big year last year, hit, I think, 25 or 28 home runs. I mean, he's a power guy in their
power
lineup.
Guy. And he was upset because a Cincinnati Inquirer reporter shared information that he wasn't available. Brian Price thought it kind of put them at a competitive advantage, releasing information about a player that they didn't want other teams to know. Jody, you are around managers all the time. You're around baseball. Is that crazy what Price...
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Brian Price, Paula, you know, he was here as a pitching coach. He left when Bob Melvin was fired out of loyalty to Bob. I mean, everything we know about Brian Price prior to this rant, I think, was very positive. I've had pitchers tell me through the years he's the best pitching coach they've ever worked with.
Sure.
By all accounts, a good guy. When I listen to that, and again, I've been in the manager's office, the games that I cover, and I cover maybe 100 a year, whether it was Kirk Gibson or... now Chip Hale, opposing managers. That, to me, sounded like a rant that was building up for a long time.
Right.
They're struggling. Their record is under 500. I think they might even be something like four. I don't know their exact record, but they're struggling. They struggled last year. You know, I think that when you hear him say, you know, are we going to do this? Are we going to tell you everything all the time? I mean, yes, he knows that. He knows that's what you do.
That's what
managers do. You walk into the clubhouse as a reporter, the most basic thing that you find, before you even go digging for anything more, the most basic thing is who's available today, who's playing today, who's in the lineup, who's available off the bench, is anyone dinged up? And then you can even, the thing that I sometimes, you know, you have to ask, okay, who's available out of the bullpen?
Sure.
Sometimes they don't want to tell you that.
Right.
Sometimes they'll say, we'll see. And that's kind of a given. That's kind of like sometimes they'll say, no, Delgado's down. He just pitched, you know, obviously there's some that are obvious. If you know the game pretty well and you get to know it day after day, you can kind of almost make your own chart and tell, okay, this guy's not going to pitch tonight. He threw 30 pitches yesterday, or he's pitched 4 days in a row. He's off. But, you know, that to me is just a lot of frustration, because he's got to know, and Brian Price knows that is the job. Especially if Devin Mesoraco was not there for like a couple of days, you would notice.
You
should ask.
It's not a job as reporters to, you know, protect a team so they're not at a competitive advantage. Our job is to report information. So, you know, and I'm going to ask Peter King about this too, because I think he's been in situations with the NFL where you're dealing with this kind of thing. He's the SI.com senior writer, coming up on Sports 360 AZ. We are indeed the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports 360 AZ.com, where it's streaming live, as well as AZCentralSports.com. You could probably tell I am not Brad Sesmat. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, here with Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona, filling in for Brad today, and very excited about our guest coming up. And I'm going to throw a curveball. I can't use that as a football metaphor, but I'm going to do it anyway. Welcome, Peter King, SI.com senior NFL writer and Monday morning quarterback editor-in-chief. Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, no problem. But before we start, can I throw you both a curveball?
Absolutely.
As longtime Valley scribes and TV people. So when I was in high school in Connecticut, I used to double date with the mother of Nick Ahmed.
Oh, really?
Now, how obscure is that?
That is obscure. I'm trying to remember if I've met his parents, by the way, but how long did that last?
So every day I wake up in New York, and one of the things I do is I look at Ahmed in the box score, and I really need him to get a few more hits, as I'm sure the Diamondback.
Yeah, he's swinging at some high pitches right now, but you know what? They feel excited about him and the fact that he's going to hit. But I got to tell you, Peter, I know you're a huge baseball fan. You're a Red Sox fan, right?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, he is as smooth at shortstop as anyone. I mean, there's a guy that's been known over the years, John McDonald, as a guy that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
Johnny Mack didn't hit the ball very well, but defensively, you could just rely. Nick Ahmed is so sure-handed over there. I told Goldie, I go, that throw is always on target. And he said, absolutely. And it's fun to watch. I love good defense, so.
Well, I'm sure
cool.
It's
he's got a fan in New York City, so good luck, Nick.
Yeah, we'll pass that along to him. That's a great story. Peter, I'm going to ask you, we were just talking before the break about the Brian Price situation. I don't know if you followed that much with the Reds all the F-bombs.
Yeah.
And we were discussing what the role of media, and do you ever face situations in your job where you're told information, you don't share it right away, or you hold back or try to make a decision about sharing it because of how it might affect a team? How do you deal with that?
Well, the only way I would hold something like that back, and I saw what Trent Rosenkranz reported, which certainly falls within the boundary of reportable stuff. You know, it's ridiculous. Isn't Devin Mesoraco like a borderline all-star catcher?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
he
if
is,
he's
yeah.
not in the lineup, he's not playing. The public wants to know.
Sure.
So it'd be like if Carson Palmer was out of the lineup and everybody was wondering, why isn't he playing? Well, if the Cardinals stonewalled Kent Summers or whoever's covering the team, it's Kent's job to basically do everything he can to find out why Carson Palmer isn't playing. So to me, I just think it shows, sort of a naivete on the Reds manager's part. As to what is fair game and what isn't fair game.
This is a big philosophical debate, but I'll just give you my take. You know, Peter, you're coming from a national perspective. You've covered football a long, long time. I think, oddly enough, and maybe sadly enough, there's a feeling sometimes in baseball and in clubhouses that the beat writer is, or even, you know, that, you know, you're not there to benefit the team. You're not, you know, obviously his job is to report the news, and I don't know where it came from, but sometimes players and managers, apparently some of them, not most of them don't, but I mean, some of them apparently think that you're there to benefit the team, but
right.
Yeah, that was crazy because I cover baseball every day. And
the thing that bothered me about what he was saying, his apology or his explanation almost made it worse because he said, I don't apologize for what I said, in essence. I just apologize for the F-bomb. I mean, the guy who covers the team for the Cincinnati Inquirer is not the guy who is the public relations director of the Cincinnati Reds and who writes what the manager wants him to write. So I have a problem, especially with his sort of quasi-apology, because it just seemed to make it, from a journalist perspective, I think it just made it worse on him because he just doesn't understand what the job of a reporter is to be.
That's Peter King talking baseball, in case you were confused. He knows a little more than football. You had a really interesting nugget, as you always do, of plenty of great information in your column, Peter, but about the Cardinals and with those four Eastern time zone games, had asked the league to try to help them so they could be back-to-back with the travel. Jody and I were talking about this before the show. Is that common for the NFL to try to accommodate those kinds of things, or is that just a
right? You know, Paula, if you look at say the Baltimore Ravens schedule this year, and you look at weeks, they had four games in either Mountain or Pacific time this year, and they asked the league, "Could you please pair us for at least one of those trips out west. Preferably, can you make the San Francisco and Oakland trips back to back, and we'll just go and stay somewhere for 8 or 9 days? Now, the NFL couldn't do that. They tried to do it, but what they ended up doing is they're starting them in Denver and then have them go to Oakland in week two, and then in week 6 and 7, they're having them go to San Francisco and Arizona. So what they, you know, now the Ravens are going to have to make up their mind. Are we going to stay out west once during the course of the year, or are we going to do it twice? And I don't know if it was Bruce Arians or Steve Keim, or maybe it was Michael Bidwill, who asked the league before, as they were getting going in the scheduling process at the end of the season, listen, for one of our trips back east, rather than have us go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, can you please pair two of the games together so we'd be able to stay over at one point? And as I said in my story today, it just so happened to be Detroit and Pittsburgh. And as I wrote this morning at the MMQB, that, you know, Bruce Arians, it probably couldn't be better for him because the back-end game on this doubleheader is in Pittsburgh. Bruce Arians is a Pittsburgher through and through, even though he's not from Pittsburgh. But he's got a lot of friends there, and I'm sure that it's not going to disappoint Bruce too much to be around Pittsburgh, which I assume is what they're going to do. To be around Pittsburgh or somewhere in the area for 5 or 6 days.
Yeah, it would be weird if, you know, Arians from York, Pennsylvania, Keim from Harrisburg, if they stay in a hotel in that area, that would be really, you know, then you know something's really up. But no, that's very interesting stuff, Peter. By the way, the article you did, I think it was last year with the scheduling and Howard Katz, I believe is his name.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That made my head explode. I just wanted, but it was fascinating.
Yeah.
It just on
yeah.
how they
well, how
shoot him out
one?
Different
how about
schedules.
This one, Paul? What was so interesting last night when I was sitting with the four guys at the NFL office, get this, 136 computers, okay, 84 on the premises, and like 50 some odd were in their cloud. Okay, this is the first year the NFL ever used off-premises computers to help them divine the schedule. And this was the 37,000th iteration on this one computer, and it was the one that they ended up choosing. So the NFL, in essence, ran about 5.4 million rubrics, about 5.4 million possibilities, and this is the one they came up with. The computer spit it out one day early last week.
Now my head's exploding,
yeah,
Jody.
I don't even want to think about it, but you did, Peter, and you shared it with all your readers. I love it.
That was crazy. You know, I'm so interested in, there's all these storylines, Peter, about how the NFL is perceiving running backs, how valuable they are to the team compared to how they used to be. I'm wondering a lot if how much interest the Cardinals have in drafting a running back if they do it in the first round. I'm just curious your perception of where the league is now with running backs and if you've heard any nuggets regarding the Cardinals.
Well, normally I would say that most running backs right now, especially after the debacle that was Trent Richardson getting picked third overall in 2012 and totally blowing up in the Browns' faces and then Indianapolis' faces, I think everybody just said, hey, look at all the great running backs that are taken down the line. Arian Foster, Terrell Davis, all of these guys. You know, the road is littered, Alfred Morris. And, you know, the road is littered with running backs who, you know, get picked low and ended up having good NFL careers. So for the most part, I think it's very understandable to not take a running back high. And if I'm the Cardinals, I might just sit there and late in the second round take, let's say, an Ameer Abdullah from Nebraska. But if Todd Gurley is there when they pick in the first round, that, to me anyway, and I don't think he will be there, that would be very, very hard to pass up. And Gurley, I think, is going to make somebody a tremendous long-term running back, even though he's coming off knee surgery now. But I'm not sure if I were them that I'd take a shot on Melvin Gordon that high. I'm not sure he's special in the way that Gurley is going to be special. But, you know, scouts I know are talking about Gurley like he's the best back to come out since Adrian Peterson. So I wouldn't think that would be a bad pick, especially in the bottom third of the round where the Cardinals are picking.
And any more buzz? Its storyline seems to change every day with Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. What's going to happen? Is there any truth to Chip Kelly maybe trying to get Mariota? Where do the things stand with those quarterbacks? Here's
what I know right now. I'd be very surprised if Tampa didn't sit right where they are and take Jameis Winston number one. I believe Marcus Mariota is going number two, but I don't know that he's going to Tennessee. As somebody in the league told me this week, this is not the week that you have an auction for the second pick in the draft. It's next week where you get to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Rustin Webster, the general manager of the Titans, Ken Whisenhunt, if somebody wants to move up bad enough, you strongly consider it. Ken Whisenhunt, as you guys know, likes a strong-armed pocket quarterback. And although I think Marcus Mariota can be that, just on the surface, he doesn't fit sort of the Phillip Rivers, Carson Palmer stereotype of what a quarterback is that a Ken Whisenhunt would really, really like, even though Palmer wasn't his guy, you know, in Arizona, obviously. But what I'm saying is I think that they would be amenable to trading, and I still think, you know, as we sit here 8 days away from the first round, I still think that it's the highest likelihood that Mariota goes to somebody at number two.
Interesting. One thing, Peter, that we were talking about, Paula and I, earlier today, and I just wanted you to maybe share your thoughts. Pat Tillman died, of course, in Afghanistan 11 years ago today, and we were sharing some thoughts on what a unique guy Pat was and how, of course, he's missed, and when we covered him here, what that was like. What are your thoughts on Pat?
Well, I've covered the NFL now for 31 years, and every year when I go around to different teams in training camp, I always ask either the coach or the PR guy, give me a rookie or give me a newcomer to your team who I don't know, who I'm going to need to know in the coming years. And that year, the Cardinals said to me, hey, listen, we got a rookie safety. We really think he's going to make the team at least as a great special teams guy. His name is Pat Tillman. So I said, great, can you set up an interview with me? And they had two-a-day practices that day. And they were at the facility in Tempe. Okay, so they weren't in Flagstaff that year, and I forget exactly why or whatever the deal was. But anyway, so they were in Tempe, and so I'm there at the appointed time, let's say 1 o'clock, and here comes this guy with a ponytail riding up on a bike. And he looks at me, and I don't know who Pat Tillman is at the time. And he looks at me and he goes, are you Mr. King? I said, yeah. He said, hey, I'm Pat Tillman. I said, hey, wow. I said, you're the first guy in my 20 years or whatever covering the NFL, 15 years, the first guy who ever showed up for an interview on a bicycle. And he goes, well, you know, I went to school here. I live right around here. And it just seems stupid to have a car. And so I just said, well, smart guy. And so we talked, and I forget anything about what we talked about other than at the end of it, I remember telling people with the Cardinals that that guy is really, really sharp and a cool guy. So that's my memory of Pat Tillman. He rode up on a bike with his ponytail flying in the breeze.
He was special, no doubt about it.
Peter, great story.
Can I just tell you one last thing?
Please do.
So two years ago, I was privileged to come out to Phoenix and to run Taft's Run. And I'll just tell you this, I will do that again. That was one of the most warm and fuzzy and wonderful and emotional weekends I've ever had covering the NFL. To see the community come out like that in such great, great numbers, some walking, some pushing strollers, some in wheelchairs, some world-class runners, you know, whoever. Larry Fitzgerald that day pushed someone in a wheelchair. And I just thought, how wonderful a legacy to leave if you're Pat Tillman and you leave this legacy of 35, 40,000 people getting together in your name because they love you and they love what you meant, not only to a sport and what you meant to the military and what you meant to the country, but what you meant to the community. It's just one of the greatest, I mean, really, one of the greatest days I've had covering the NFL was that day running Pat's Run. I'll never forget it. And it's such a special event, and Marie Tillman and everybody connected with this foundation should be so proud.
It's amazing, and this year's is April 25th, coming up this weekend, and for people who don't know, it's 4.2 miles reflective of Pat's jersey number, and you end at the 42-yard line in Sun Devil Stadium, and you talking about it just gave me chills, Peter. That was great, and so I'm glad you reminded us of that. That's Peter King, SI.com senior NFL writer, Monday Morning Quarterback, and editor-in-chief. Thank you very much for joining us,
Thanks,
Peter.
Paula and Jody, thanks a million for having me. Have a great weekend.
All right, that was a great interview. Great stuff about Pat Tillman.
Got chills,
I know.
Because it is, and they do it all through the country now too. Shadow runs, and it's fantastic.
It's truly
for Pat, and it really says a lot about Pat, but it says a lot about the community too.
And you absolutely get all walks of life, and you don't have to be an athlete. You can walk the whole thing. As he mentioned, people pushing wheelchairs, people without limbs running the event. It's truly, truly awesome.